Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, Marv Albert, I guess that's our version of This Is Your Hockey Life, as we welcome the longtime radio voice of the New York Rangers, Marv Albert. You get some flashbacks when you hear that?
No question, Howie. It's like it was a different life at that time. But pleasure to be with you, as always. And I did catch the end of your chat with Sal Redlight Messina, or I should say Sal's diatribe, which reminds me of a favorite story regarding Sal. But first, let me say I was really fortunate to work with two fantastic color commentators in Sal and the Big Whistle, Bill Chadwick, both with terrific careers on the air. But getting back to Sal, I don't know if you were aware of this. He thought he was the Lou Gehrig or Cal Ripken of hockey broadcasting. He once told a reporter that he'd done 1,300 straight game broadcasts. People would believe it. I remember it was written a couple of times, but actually it was 1,300 straight games that he could get to. In effect, if he had a situation where he couldn't make it, a dentist appointment, it wouldn't count against the record. But
that's the way I
think
golf.
He thinks he's in the Guinness Book of Records for that.
Well, that makes sense. But you guys had quite the partnership because, you know, sometimes partners need a lot of time to develop a certain chemistry. But yours, you know, for a guy who had no broadcasting experience like Sal, the chemistry seemed to develop almost overnight. At least that's my memory. Is yours different?
Now, he had a really good sense of humor, and starting with the red light situation, which comes from obviously the red light going on when the goaltender allows a goal. But he had so much experience. He probably mentioned that he was, aside from being a good goaltender on a lesser level, and was the backup goalie who, unfortunately never really got into a game. He almost did one time. But he also had the experience of being a minor official, which meant they would switch off every game between the goal judge and the timekeeper and the guy in the penalty box. And, you know, who has that kind of experience? I mean, and then you had Bill, the Big Whistle, who was one of the top, he's a Hall of Fame official. In fact, he's the guy who invented at one point they didn't even have signals, indicating what kind of penalties were being called, and he is the one who devised the signals, and also had, his background in hockey was unbelievable. I mean, he was a guy who officiated games with Maurice the Rocket Richard and Gordie Howe and, on and on. So, and also had a really good sense of humor, which I always think is important with the color commentator that you work with.
Oh, it's huge, huge. And I know that, for you, when you started doing the Rangers, you had no color commentator. You know, you just heard both ends of the gamut, sort of, from Boom Boom Geoffrion's first goal as a Ranger and all the way up to when they won the Cup that night in 1994. But when you started doing the Rangers, if I'm not mistaken, you would only do, what, the last 10 minutes of the first and second period somehow, and then the entire third period? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, you have a very good memory, Howie. It was an odd setup. I had convinced the station, it was WHN, which is actually the predecessor of WFAN, and I convinced them to carry Knicks and Rangers, and they were a country music station and then a pop station, and they did not want to take away from the music, but they agreed to do it. And hockey was on a year before the Knicks were on, actually. And someone came up with this philosophy, as you mentioned, of doing the 6 minutes of the first and second period, the last 6 minutes. So I sit in the booth watching the games, and even road games were like that. And then the entire third period, not realizing that, you know, the first 14 minutes of each, the first and second period, it could be very important. But I was so thrilled to be able to be on the air with this that, hey, you know, it was accepted, and then they changed it the following year where it was the full hockey game. So it was sometimes frustrating. You'd sit there, there'd be some great plays and goals, and, you know, you just had to recap it when you finally came on the air.
I'm curious how it worked on the other end, because at least for a while, in that period, WHN, I think they called it beautiful music that they played. So, I mean, they could, what, be right in the middle of a Perry Como record.
Yeah.
And the next thing you'd know, you'd be down to the last 6 minutes of the period. How did that work? Did they just wait till the record ended, or wait for a commercial break and then segue into the last 6 minutes? Do you remember the mechanics of that?
It was I'm not sure always what took place in the studio. Sometimes I'd get fortunate if it was a disc jockey with a little sense of sports philosophy. I might get it a little early, so I could steal a minute, you know, or two. But again, as I said, I was so thrilled to be on the air that, you know, just to be able to do that was great, because hockey had not, the Rangers had not been on the air for a number of seasons. It was a very tough sell at that time. And, you know, just to get on the air, even the Knicks had not, they had gone a couple of seasons without being on radio. They may have had some TV games. I don't think the Rangers had any TV games at the time. They may have had maybe Channel 11 or Channel 9 carried them, you know, as a special. It really, when you rate the sports at that time in New York, they were all the way down the list. It was so different than what has taken place in recent years, with obviously with NBA and also NHL. So again, it was just a thrill to be able to do the games, even for that short time. Over the first two periods.
It was certainly a thrill for you, but it helped mold careers, as you well know, including my own, because I didn't know a whole lot about hockey until the Rangers had started to turn the corner in 1966. You know, they were getting more attention in the newspapers, but still not a lot of play on television. You were doing the games on radio. I think that was the first year that you had done all three periods. And I'm telling you, listening to you, I'll never forget this, Marv, twisting the dial one night, and I landed on a game that you were doing, and I doubt you'll remember this play. It's just another play in a melange of plays that you called over the years. But it was unusual because Dallas Smith, a defenseman of all things with the Boston Bruins, was awarded a penalty shot in a game against the Rangers that you were calling. And I landed on 10:50 a.m. right around the time that penalty shot was called. And hearing you set it up and hearing you do that shot, which I believe Eddie Jockman stopped, and then later to continue to do the rest of the game, it instantly sold me on hockey, the Rangers, and really broadcasting hockey as a career. So, you know, if it worked that way for me, I'm sure that you turned a lot of other people on to hockey during that period. Did you have any ideas the Rangers were making their move back then that, you know, you were kind of in on the ground floor of something that was growing in popularity?
First of all, I appreciate what you said about that. And you know, I remember the Donald Smith penalty shot.
Really?
Vividly, yes.
That's great.
Well, we didn't get that many penalty shots to call. But at first, I didn't know what the impact would be. And it, as the Rangers started to have success, you could feel it. You know, they'd always get their 17,000, 18,000 at the Garden, you know, so it always had a, it was like a base following. And there was, I think television helped it also, although it was always a very difficult TV sport because you couldn't follow the puck the same way. You know, it was always a better sport to see in person. But my brothers and I played so much hockey. We played mostly roller hockey, you know, where we had the cages, you know, the goaltending cages in the street, and when the traffic would come, you'd have to move it away and hold up the game. But it became, in my area, in Brooklyn, it became a very popular sport. I mean, that and basketball in the schoolyard and, of course, stickball. But we played so much hockey, and we knew all the players. And I can recall my first real exposure to players was I was able to maneuver an interview. I was a writer for my high school newspaper, the Lincoln Log, at Lincoln High School in Brooklyn. And I arranged to do an interview with Don Bones Raleigh, one of my heroes, wore number 7. And the Rangers would practice at a place called Skateland, which, I don't know, was above the Garden or near the old, this is the old Garden on 49th. And he was such a great guy. He was so kind. He gave me his hockey stick, which I still have somewhere. It's in storage, but I still have it. First, I started to use it, which was a bad idea, you know, in roller hockey games. And then I realized this is something I should keep, so I put it away. But that was my first close-up introduction as a kid, being able to watch the Rangers practice. I think Phil Watson was a coach at the time. Yeah. And the hockey players were always just so, I mean, they were so kind. I don't know, it was probably it's the Canadian type personality, I think. Which the Americans who have come into the league have kind of adopted. I find that they're some of the best players in terms of interviewing, and it's changed a lot in other sports. I mean, NBA is great now. Baseball's gotten better. NFL is pretty good. But they were always very giving in terms of what they would say, and it wouldn't be just cliches, and they were kind, you know, they treated reporters very well. And you know, at that time, that wasn't always the case, particularly in baseball.
Right. So back then, you're obviously starting to formulate the idea that you want to become a broadcaster. And just as you were kind enough to mentor me and others, I'm sure, who have gone on to broadcasting careers in New York and elsewhere, so was Marty Glickman, that mentor to you. Now, did Marty do a lot of hockey? And was he influential specifically in helping you sort of set up the geography of the ice and some of the verbiage that we all use now?
Marty was more geared towards basketball and baseball, did some hockey on the radio. He filled in for Jim Gordon was doing the games at one point on WCBS radio. And I got to know Marty because doing work on my school paper, I ended up being introduced to him when he had a series called the High School Game of the Week, in which they would travel to different high schools in New York. And I ended up because he did a Lincoln-Madison game, and I ended up working for him doing research and production. And he hired me, and I ended up with him for a couple of seasons. And through that, he was very helpful because I would play my tapes for him. I kept him captive, I think, at times where he would give me pointers that he was so great about it. And then I ended up going to Syracuse where he went and was a great athlete. He was an Olympic sprinter and a football player at Syracuse, and was probably one of the first athlete-turned-broadcasters and specialized in basketball, and he set the geography of the court in his NBA games and college broadcasts. So in all our discussions, philosophy in terms of geography of the basketball court kind of translated to hockey, how important it was to be able to say exactly where the puck is and what the lines are, etc. But I listened a lot to the Canadian broadcasters, Fausty Hewitt, and particularly Danny Gallivan. Fausty Hewitt was renowned in Canada. He did the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Gallivan was the voice of the Montreal Canadiens. And I got to know Danny over the years, and also was really very helpful in terms of just giving pointers, and just was a very nice man, but is terrific broadcaster in terms of the setting the terminology of the ice, and I think I gained a lot from that. I would listen to him on my shortwave radio in my living room, and learned it by listening to him and then actually doing some practice games at the Garden because I was allowed into the broadcast booth after, working for Marty doing stats for Nick games. And then I ended up subbing. I was working at WCBS Radio for Marty after college. I was his writer, and I started to get some shows on the air. And I ended up, when Jim Gordon wasn't available, just to be able to do games. So that's how I really started out with hockey.
Well, as you developed as the Rangers' regular radio broadcaster, you were, I guess, your timing was great because the Rangers were starting to turn the corner, as we mentioned. And so the Emil Francis years of the gag line and Brad Park and Eddie Jockeman were some of the most successful in the history of the franchise, even though they never did win a Stanley Cup. But do you have any particular random reminiscences or memories or even special games that you can recall doing in that era?
Well, there are several that stand out. You mentioned Boom Boom Geoffrion's first goal. It was a power play goal. He had come to the Rangers from the Montreal Canadiens, and I got to know Boom Boom very well when he coached the Rangers. He was such a good guy to talk to. And just that call, just the way his stick handling was so adept, it just made for a good call. It was on. I think that was when we were doing the games. Doing the full games. There was the Pete Stemkowski goal in triple overtime at the Garden, beat the Blackhawks. That tied the playoff series at 6, as I recall, 1971 semifinals. Yes, and I remember Bill Chadwick screaming, "Well, the Rangers will be impossible to beat in Game 7 in Chicago after that emotional lift." Of course, they lost, So, and there was the return of Eddie Jockeman, which was a very emotional night at the Garden. Emil was looking to make changes. I guess this preceded the trade with Boston, the Esposito, Hodge, Brad Park,
John
Bertel
deal. Yeah, by just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but Eddie came back days after he became a Detroit Red Wing, and the Garden crowd was just chanting, "Eddie, Eddie." And he had tears, and he took his mask off, and there were tears coming from his eyes. And it wasn't one of his great games, but the Rangers had like 40-plus shots on him, and Detroit won it. I think it was like 6-4. Was a high scoring game.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he, I mean, there were Ranger fans were rooting against their team. They were rooting for Detroit. Every save that Jockman made, you know, they went crazy. And you know, when he came off the ice, it was like a standing ovation because he was a very popular player. And yet he had led the Rangers into 9 consecutive playoffs, as you mentioned. That was such a good era. But they had John Davidson in the wings, you know, a younger goaltender who was a very good goaltender. And they wanted to make a change. But I think Emil was just looking to break things up. It was not developing into a good season. So he made he let Jockman go on waivers, and he made the deal with the Bruins.
And even though it looked for a half a dozen years that Emil's Rangers might have been the team to win the Cup, it didn't happen for nearly 20 more years. And
right.
So that brings us to that night of June 14th, 1994. We played your call actually twice, once the long version, and now I guess the 45 version, as they used to call it. But
Howie, that's overexposure. Wait a second. Yeah.
I know. That's all right.
Sorry.
When you get to that night, though, what did that night mean to you personally?
Well, first of all, that was such a crazy period for me in a good way, because the Knicks were playing the Rockets in the NBA Finals, and I was doing that for NBC, so I was going back and forth. And the Knick-Rockets series was very good. It went 7. You know, the Rockets had a 3-2 lead in that, and then the Knicks had a 3-2 lead in that, and then Rockets won the last two in Houston to take the title. And I'm going back and forth between Houston and New York, and I'm saying to myself, there's got to be a game that Howie can do and come up with one of the most exciting hockey calls of all time, and it should involve Stephan Matteau.
And you had that figured out, did you?
Yeah, and there it was. That was a great call. That was tremendous.
Thank you.
Because it wasn't like a normal hockey call, you know, with the Matteau. You know, that was really something. And then I was back for Game 7, and in my mind, the Rangers were much better team than Vancouver, but here it is, 7 games, and I think people were getting very nervous. But it was just a great kick as one who grew up as a, you know, I'd go to New York Rover games. A lot of people listening probably might not realize there was a minor league team that played at the Garden, usually in the afternoon, and the Rangers would play at night. I'd be going to doubleheaders as a kid. You just never thought it would happen. And it was nerve-wracking because it went to a 7th game. So that was one of the great broadcast thrills of my life, to be able to, you know, do that and make the call of that the Rangers have won the Stanley Cup.
Well, look, you did not have to invite me in to do the second period of that night, as well as Game 5 when they could have won it the first time, but you did, and that just punctuates.
Well, you did
how
most
much
of the season, I think. Right? You did.
Well, that's all right, but
yeah, so
we always knew. You didn't have to do that, but it meant the world to me.
Well, I thought it was the right thing to do, and you know, you've done a tremendous job with that, with the Mets, and. Well, I'm really proud the way it worked out. I mean, I remember you visiting me at WHN on a number of occasions.
Yeah,
and I'm saying, who is this annoying kid? He just keeps coming.
Well, look, you know, I don't have to tell you, because I know I've told you privately, but I owe my career to you. You've meant everything to me professionally. You're a friend personally. I treasure that. And beyond that, your influence on broadcasting for a couple of generations now has just been remarkable. So thanks so much, Marv, for joining us. Stay safe, stay well, and we'll talk.
You too, Howie. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.